This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
the chairperson of the Electoral Commission held a press briefing and told Ghanaians that they are waiting for a few of the pink sheets, about 60 of them, to come from the regional centers. And then from there, once they cross-check the figures, they will announce the person who won the presidential election. But from provisional results provided, it appears main opposition leader Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo has won the presidential election.
That's VOA's Peter Cloete with the latest developments on Ghana's elections. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, a new report indicates conflict, violence, and natural disasters as the causes for the displacement of 12.5 million people in Africa.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Ghana's Electoral Commission is expected to announce the winners of Wednesday's presidential and parliamentary elections this evening. Provisional results are being released one constituency at a time. The commission says that's the normal procedure based on a multiple-stage verification process to ensure all the vote counts are valid. The opposition NPP party said its own tabulations show presidential challenger Nana Akufo-Addo is headed for victory. The ruling NDC party said the current president, John Mahama, is doing well across the country, and they condemn the NPP's claim as irresponsible. Our colleague Peter Cloete is in Accra following election results, and he provides us with the latest update.
The chairperson of the Electoral Commission held a press briefing and told Ghanaians that they are waiting for a few of the pink sheets, about 60 of them, to come from the regional centers. And then from there, once they cross-check the figures, they will announce the person who won the presidential election. But from provisional results provided, it appears main opposition leader Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo has won the presidential election.
What is the mood of the people considering this?
I rode across town in the capital city, Accra, and it's been quiet. But when I got to the residence of the opposition leader, it was that of jubilation. And people are celebrating, tooting their horns, their car horns for that matter. And then when I got to the residence of John Dramani Mahama, the incumbent president, there were some jubilation there, but not as much as that of the opposition leader. And he came out, the president came out and said they are just waiting for the announcement by the Electoral Commission chief about who won the Electoral Commission. But whichever way it goes, he says he is ready to accept it and that his party and, for that matter, the supporters are law-abiding citizens and they will do as the will of the people demand.
If the challenger is declared the winner by the Electoral Commission, will this be considered an upset or is this something that was expected to happen?
Well, it will be considered an upset. However, the ruling party, or for that matter, incumbent President John Dramani Mahama, was overly confident that Ghanaians will repose confidence in him for a second time to re-elect him. It was not so. From the provisional results provided across the country, the system was so transparent, you could clearly sit home and tabulate who will win, except that when there is what we call overvoting, the Supreme Court has ruled that if more people voted that can be accounted for on the voter list, then that polling station results would have to be invalidated. It remains to be seen how many of them will be invalidated, but as it stands now, currently, it looks like Nana Akufo-Addo is going to be elected the new president of Ghana.
What were some of the issues at hand that people want addressed there?
Well, the immediate issues that are at hand are high unemployment rate and corruption. These are the two main issues, and the economy, basically. These are the three main issues that the two or more parties fought and presented their ideas to the people of Ghana. But it seems that Ghanaians decided to choose Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, the main opposition leader, as having the best policies, because his victory is overwhelming, because they have won quite a sizable amount of number of people in the Ghanaian parliament. And even in the strongholds of the NDC, the NPP made some significant gains in there. So it's a resounding victory if the provisional results are anything to go by.
How are some of his policies different from the president's?
Allegations were leveled against officials that were around President John Dramani Mahama, and Ghanaians wanted heads to roll. However, the president said that these are just perceptions and they have not been proven yet. Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, the main opposition leader, said he's going to set up an independent prosecutor's office, which will go after those who are alleged to have stolen public funds, who have enriched themselves, who have used government contracts that they inflated, allegedly, to pad their pockets. And then he said there will be one district, one factory, which means that every district in the country, they're going to provide not only electricity, but provide factories that will create jobs for the unemployed youth. So most people, I think, from the provisional results we have, believed in what he said rather than the president.
With the president saying that he will concede if, in fact, the challenger is declared the winner, do you expect any violence?
There wouldn't be violence, as some people have been speculating. The police have been deployed across the country. Not that there have been any incidents of violence or anything like that, but to prevent any act of violence. Things have been pretty quiet and Ghanaians are going about their business as usual with a little to no fanfare at all. Majority of the people, it's business as usual. Let me put it that way.
That was our colleague Peter Clotie speaking with me from Accra.
Nearly 12.5 million people were displaced in 21 African countries at the end of 2015. A new report blames that on conflict, violence, and natural disasters. The figures for 2016 probably won't be any better. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center says about 9,500 people are uprooted from their homes every day in Africa. Each displaced person, it says, represents a personal tragedy and a challenge for local, national, and international responders. Alexandra Bilak is director of the IDMC.
The reason why we decided to publish this Africa-specific report was also to respond to calls from our partners at the African Union who have been asking us to provide a more precise picture of this crisis at the continental level.
Africa is second only to the Middle East, where people are forced to flee.
It is suffering from repeated displacements caused by conflict and violence across a number of countries, but it is also affected by displacement caused by other triggers and other factors like natural hazards. We found that in 2015, 1.1 million of these displacements had been caused by disasters triggered by these rapid onset hazards like floods, Malawi being one of the countries affected, but also by slower onset disasters like droughts.
Bilak says some nations have perennial displacement problems.
Nigeria, DRC, South Sudan, CAR, Sudan, Somalia. When it comes to natural hazards and development projects, we're looking at a much more geographically comprehensive picture, I would say. Of course, when it comes to drought, we're looking mostly at the Horn of Africa and the Sahel. When it comes to development projects, although we don't have any comprehensive data at the moment, we do know that development is causing displacement across the board.
3.5 million people were displaced in Africa last year, bringing the total in the 21 countries included in the report to 12.4 million.
They are enormous numbers, but what they provide is really a sense of urgency, first of all. So it's really a question of putting this high up on policymakers' agenda. I think there's also an opportunity for different countries to learn from each other. I mean, some of the affected countries, because they've been affected by internal displacement repeatedly over the years, have actually developed very interesting national IDP policies and strategies.
The Kampala Convention is the informal name for the African Union Convention for the Protection and Assistance of Internally Displaced Persons in Africa. It was adopted in 2009. and requires governments to protect the rights of people forced to flee their homes due to conflict. While the displacement figures for Africa for 2016 are not final yet, Bilok is pretty sure they won't improve.
As the report says, it's very unlikely that that number will have gone down in 2016, simply because we know that there have been new displacements, new movements in 2016, but also because we know that the 12.4 million people currently living in displacement are not likely to have found a durable or a sustainable solution to their displacement. So it's likely that the numbers will be either similar or slightly higher.
The director of the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center says gaps remain in gathering data on people who've been displaced for years, even decades. Bilok says international attention can wane when humanitarian crises become protracted. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib. 16 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Ghana's Electoral Commission is expected to announce the winners of Wednesday's presidential and parliamentary elections this evening. And a new report indicates conflict, violence, and natural disasters as the cause for the displacement of 12.5 million people in Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Hundreds of sub-Saharan African migrants stormed the barbed wire fences surrounding the Spanish enclave of Ceuta, located on the North African coast on the border. Ceuta is one of two Spanish enclaves in Morocco that have been used by migrants as entry points to mainland Europe. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following that story and other migrant-related news in Europe. From Rome, she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Well, at least 400 people have broken through this border fence that divides Morocco from the enclave, which is part of Spain. And the migrants were mainly from sub-Saharan Africa. They stormed different parts of this fence, which is around 6 metres high or 19 or 20 feet high. It's a barbed wire fence designed to keep migrants out of the enclave. And this was the biggest single breach of the border in a decade, according to local media. Border guards were injured in the surprise assault, and the migrants who made it through also had a few scratches and a few minor injuries. They were celebrating to have made it to the other side, and they saw that as quite a breakthrough. And many of those who breached the border have now been detained, although Spanish Interior Minister Juan Ignacio Zoido said that around 20% were still unaccounted for. And this crossing point is really a point where people come through looking for work or political asylum in Europe. And it's really the only land border with Africa, but really quite a breakthrough for these migrants who've tried to make it through to Spain.
On another matter, Josephine, I understand that in Rome today, mayors from various European cities are meeting on the migrant refugee issue, is that correct?
That's right. This is a two-day conference that's been called by the Vatican, obviously with strong support from Pope Francis, who we know has spoken out many times against the migrant crisis, calling for more to be done to support refugees. This has brought together around 80 mayors from various countries across Europe, from Germany, France, Italy, and other countries. And today we heard from the mayor of Barcelona, Ada Colau. She is a left-wing mayor from Barcelona, and she spoke out very strongly responding to the comments made by Marine Le Pen, the head of the National Front in France, who has said that children of illegal migrants should be denied free schooling in France. And this particular mayor said that was a threat to democracy, and the idea that Europe should give education and health to the children of migrants It was unacceptable, she said, and we have to really fight back, and it's really unacceptable to accept this kind of argument. And she also said there was a risk because we're seeing growing racism in Europe and the growth of neo-fascist and right-wing movements opposed to migrants and promoting racism in Europe.
Now, I see that the migrant issue is spurring a demonstration tomorrow in Rome. Would you tell us about that?
Yes, there's a movement in Rome, a non-profit movement, and it has worked very closely with the migrants who have been living on the streets here. Some of those have been forced off the streets recently, but this movement says too many are being forced to sleep on the streets of Rome, that the welcome centres are exhausted, and they are urgently appealing to the city of Rome to do more to support these migrants. Many of them came from Eritrea, Ethiopia, Somalia, and they said that they were escaping political persecution in their own countries. They refused to give their names. Now they're facing another challenge, and that is near freezing temperatures and a lot of people still sleeping on the streets and desperate to find somewhere to stay as they determine whether they can get some sort of political asylum or leave Italy and move into other countries.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
In Zimbabwe, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization has embarked on a $6 million program to rehabilitate irrigation schemes that President Robert Mugabe's government abandoned, leaving several communities exposed to drought. Sebastian Mumfu in Zimbabwe went to one of the projects.
That is a tractor at Jalukange Irrigation Scheme near Zimbabwe's border with Botswana, about 600 kilometers south of Harare, tilling the land for farmers to plant crops. This 57-hectare plot last had activity almost a decade ago before the irrigation scheme collapsed and left communities in this drought-prone area with no source of food but to depend on handouts. Tekla Muzamiri is one of the farmers we have moved back to help lot at Jalukange since the FAO provided funds to rehabilitate irrigation schemes in Zimbabwe. She left her plot in 2004. Now she thinks this new project will change her fortunes. She says what we are looking forward to is farming and getting out of hunger. We have no food because this area is dry. We cannot rely on rains because there isn't much rainfall in this area, plus temperatures are very high. We want to plant maize because we have no food. Those who do not get handouts have to make brooms for sale. Brooms are made of straw drawn from the Shashe River on the border with Botswana. For Tekla, it is difficult given that she can't risk taking her 23-month-old twins Tinashe and Tadiwa to that river. So she wants water from the river to irrigate her plants. Another farmer, Lamek Nkomo, is optimistic that the FAO program will ease hunger in his family. But he says the government is taking time to work on the water canals at Jalukange irrigation scheme that rains destroyed years back.
So look at Kukula. I'm saying and
you see, it's now open and the water now flows everywhere, he says, causing gullies. It was the water going over the top instead of under as it ought to be. Another problem is the brand of maize we got this time is unfamiliar. The seed we got is not the one we would have preferred for this environment. We face water and power challenges, and because of that, we need early maturity varieties. Conrad Zawe, the head of irrigation development in Zimbabwe's government, says he is aware of the issues farmers in the country's 8 smallholder irrigation schemes face. He said the government is working on them. He is hopeful the rehabilitation program will ease Zimbabwe's perennial problem of food shortages.
The intention is to give inputs to farmers so that they can feed the grain reserve and then make money themselves and then remain with some food themselves. We are going to frantically make sure that happens. Over and above that, we need to extend the area that is under irrigation from 206,000 hectares to at least 2.5 million hectares. So it's a long way to go.
It has been a long time since Zimbabwe, once the breadbasket of Southern Africa, relied on its own for food. At the moment, it is one of the Southern African countries FAO is giving funding to in order to ease the country's worst drought in 35 years induced by El Nino. The FAO says more than 40 million people need food assistance across Southern Africa before the next harvest in March, with Madagascar, Malawi, and Zimbabwe being some of the worst hit. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News at Jalukange Irrigation Scheme, Bedbridge, Zimbabwe.
Thank you, Sebastian. A new survey of U.S. voters and poll workers suggests that a slender majority of Americans generally trust the accuracy of voting systems and how votes are counted. However, 20% do not have confidence in the national election voting tally. In addition, one-third of all voters surveyed said they have concerns about voting technologies in their specific locations. 80% of voters and 90% of election officials said they believe upgrading and improving voting systems would strengthen confidence in the national vote. The survey was sponsored by Smartmatic, one of the world's oldest and largest providers of electronic voting systems.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Bill Barber, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Sunday, we have a special from Cameroon. Eric Aliana, featuring his brand new album, Spirituality. Tune in at 0900 15 20 and 2200 UTC. You'll be glad you did.
Tuesday on Health Chat. Global health and human rights. We will explore the right to health and health-related human rights. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202 205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Let's chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.